plummeted. But we've known for quite some time that the real fight in this country is at the state capitals, particularly in the South. Because in the state capitals, that's where election laws are passed, educational laws, labor rights. All of those issues grow out of legislation that come through state capitals. And this particular legislature is really a reaction to our success. You know, last few years, we were able to win things like same-day registration, early voting, and Sunday voting, earned income tax credit, the Racial Justice Act, more focus on public education. And we did it with a different electorate, a fusion electorate, a coming together that takes advantage of the new demographics where whites and blacks and Latinos and gay and straight and people of faith and labor and women and men and rural and urban come together. That's the dynamic that can change the South. So that's why we're focused on these state capitals, because of the power at state capitals. And if you want to change the nation, you have to change the South. If you want to change the South, you have to change these state capitals. And we believe that this extreme ideological group understands that their narrow-minded agenda doesn't have much longer in the public arena. In other words, the demographics are changing, people are coming together, they know they have a limited amount of time, and so what they're trying to do is reshift public policy, but also, not only reshuffle public policy, they're trying to restructure even how people have access to voting as a desperation to hold on to power.
Reverend Dr. William Barber, we want to thank you for being with us, President of the North Carolina NAACP. That does it for our broadcast, Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Renee Felsar, Monte Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Julie Crosby and Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. We are the station making waves. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is July the 12th, 2013, and my name is Jay Koronek, and I'm here in the station with Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director. Well, Dennis, we survived the 4th of July. That was a little ways back, but...
Survived?
Long weekend.
Did you anticipate not? I mean, was that a big surprise afterward?
Well, a lot of people are going on trips, long trips. You know how the traffic was since you live a little bit out there next to one of our major thoroughfares in Michigan. So, I just think it was very busy and a lot of people were out of town, including our guest that was scheduled for last week. Candidate for Dearborn City Council has not rescheduled yet, even though we left messages. Just a word, program note here, which I'll mention again at the end of the show. Next week, for the full hour here on the new WHFR Journal, we will have Henry Ford Community College President Stan Jensen. He's our new president. Got into office in May, and then it was officially discovered that there's a $17 million deficit for the next year. And so welcome, President Jensen.
Interesting.
And as he said in the first meeting, you can't blame me, at least, for that. But he said, after the first meeting, yes, you can blame me. But he has some answers, some solutions. We've done a variety of belt tightening. It hasn't been pleasant, but he will explain, as I think most of the community wants to know, how did this happen? You know, how did we... slowly, and I think it started in January. Well, we're $4 million in debt. Well, we're six. No, the next month we're $8 million in. Oh no, it's more like 12. No, boom. Every month, we discovered that the budget at the college projected through next year is going to be $2 or $3 more million in the hole. Now I think it's leveled. And the estimate was about $16.6 million. And already, President Jensen has done cuts, cost savings, And again, some things are not desirable, but we don't think they're going to affect the educational excellence of the college here. Some people did lose their jobs. They were, quote unquote, laid off. But what are their chances of being rehired here? Probably not good. In any event, I will have the chance to talk to President Jensen. He can explain to you, the community, exactly what's going on and what track we're on. You know, this is the first time I've been here at the college as an employee, 40 years full-time and the last 5 years part-time. We have never been in debt, never had a budget deficit, 45 years. That's my recollection. And I think we probably never had a deficit since 1938 when we started, in fact. I don't remember ever hearing about that even before I began here. So how did it happen? What have we done about it? What's the path forward? And sure, I'm also going to let them do a little PR. What's great that's happening this fall, that in spite of the financial things, that's, you know, in a way, that's above and beyond the actual fact of educating students here at the college and being a cultural resource for the community. And so we're going to have, I think, a great session with Dr. Jensen, his first appearance on the new WHFR Journal. And then the week after.
Well, we have two council candidates, challengers, if you will. We'll start the hour with Colette Richards, and then that will be followed by Mike Cerini. Mm-hmm. So we'll have both of them on. Give them 15 minutes of fame, as you say.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to back track just a second. I'm really, it's in the papers, and I know we've talked about the amnesty program here, but I'm curious how much input Dr. Jensen had with that, because I know the board was the one who implemented it, and they're hoping that will begin, I believe, Monday for a right. solid month.
Yes. Yes. That's, I mentioned in the show last week that if you have any outstanding debt to Henry Ford Community College from anything, whether it was overdue book fines in the library mm-hmm. or as a student here, or of course tuition or books from the college store that was necessary for your class. If you have not paid the money that you should have to us, and unfortunately there's $12 million outstanding
right.
total, and the college is responsible for paying that to somebody, to the banks. That gave us the money in the first place. In any event, there's an amnesty, 50%. You pay 50%, we'll write it off. And this is a one-time-only deal, and only for a month.
Right.
So if you know anybody that owes debts here, it means it looks bad on their credit report, because we report that to the credit bureaus. So you'll never get a credit card or a house payment or a house loan or a car loan or anything like that if you have this outstanding debt from Henry Ford Community College. And that hurts, of course, greatly. But then you can't continue your education at the college level at all, nor even get the credits that you might have already right. earned. They will not give you a transcript. And so you're sort of dead in the water in terms of higher ed if you haven't paid what you owe to the college. So they think, you know, even as we said last week, if only a couple people go for it, because maybe the people that haven't paid back what they owe have no money at all. I mean, you know, they can't even pay 50%, and that's really unfortunate. But if you have the ability to pay at least 50% of it, we'll write the whole thing off, you know, and then you're reestablished. Your credit becomes good again, and you can get your transcripts, and you can come back to the college to take more credits. Hopefully with real money next time around, of course, you don't get in the same problem again. That amnesty starts
Monday.
Okay.
July 15th.
The 15th to about the 15th of August.
August 14th. And if something, by chance, maybe your account is already in collections, which means a collection agency now has the is entitled to the money because they bought the paperwork mm-hmm. or whatever from the college.
Yeah.
And the article I read, if that student comes to the college and pays off their debt, their 50%, 25% of that will go to the collection agency. So everybody mm-hmm. gets money.
Just another program note, 3 weeks from today, I'm looking forward to it. I know Dennis is trying to find his sunscreen somewhere. we're going to be out having fun in the sun at the fantastic Dearborn Homecoming. 3 days. We're going to be there 10 hours a day from 10 until 8 at our WHFR tent just south of the bridge going over to the Ford Field, the original Ford Field, by the way, in West Dearborn, north of Michigan Avenue off Monroe Street. And we're going to do the journal live, weather permitting, technology permitting. Last year we were on my cell phone, I think, for the whole thing. And
boy, was that fun.
Yeah, that was. it definitely sounded like we were outdoors, I'm sure. Crackle, bang, pop, background noises, people screaming across from the carnival, too,
the
carnival rides.
Midway,
You know, I want another cotton candy, please. You know, no, we're WHFR. The candy stand is across the way. So we had always have a lot of fun out there. But, you know, that's the last Friday before the election, August 6th, the primary election, where especially in Dearborn, there's five candidates for mayor, and only the top two will go on till November. But unfortunately, four of the five don't have any name recognition. I've received no flyers. I've seen nothing in the paper about those four candidates. But the council has 21 candidates. Okay, only five incumbents are trying to return, and five of the seven presently there. So this will get the field down to 14. Well, that's significant. If you don't make it in the top 14, you won't get a chance to be elected to the Dearborn City Council. So it's a very important primary in Dearborn and other places, too, around the area. But especially in Dearborn, a lot of candidates, a lot of choices. Who are the best? And on that Friday, August the 2nd, we can interview some people out at the field if they want to come and have fun in the sun with us. Hopefully we'll have AT&T has now promised us definitely to have a working dedicated phone line there for us this year. So we won't be using my cell phone anymore, folks. It'll seem rather professional, I think. And
cross your fingers.
And but those candidates are we can schedule for that day. Dennis, if it bunches up, I'll even take three. We don't want to have a debate. We want to have each person feel comfortable. But we'll put 3 15 minutes in there for remaining candidates. Challengers, you know the incumbents already. That's why I was kind of torn about Mike Cerini, because he has name recognition from his mother, who for years was on the council. He automatically has a big advantage as a challenger. But he's not his mother. So what does he believe? What does he think? And we'll talk to him, as I said, in 2 weeks from today. But on August 2nd, yes, I'm saying if you're a challenger for the Dearborn City Council, we would love to have you meet us out at Ford Field, fun in the sun, live radio, to answer our questions about your candidacy, because it's only like 4 days before the election on August 6th.
Well, and to be clear, not just council challengers. I think at that point, if a mayoral challenger would come up, and I think we would have a discussion, wouldn't we? We won't close the door on any challengers once we're out there.
Well, let's see. I know we did get a request already months ago, and I probably lost it from one of the mayoral challengers. But certainly whoever is the challenger after August 6th.
Absolutely.
To Mayor O'Reilly. Yes, I'd like to get him on the show. I think it's only men running against the mayor at this point. And I'd like to get him on the show then. The issue for me is to keep slots enough open to accommodate this multitude of council candidates. Although certainly the mayor's job, if you get elected to it, is much more significant. I mean, it's a strong mayor type of government. Look it up in your political science book. I mean, you have a lot of influence to make decisions. Oh, yeah, the council has to approve this or that. But basically, you run the place, okay, with a little bit of, you know, council support. And usually, since they're just part-time and don't do their homework much, they just sort of approve most of them approve most things that the mayor submits.
And then
because he's on the right track and everybody knows it, or just because they don't do their homework and they don't know how to critique it.
Or you have those certain individuals who, no matter what the mayor is in favor of, they take the opposite.
FYI about voting, too. Of course, if you're not registered to vote, sorry I didn't get a chance to mention it last Friday, but you were mostly out of town, right, folks, right, listeners? Or maybe you caught the podcast late, but Monday was the last day to register for the first time to vote, and so we're past that. So if you're not registered to vote anywhere in Michigan, you can't vote in the primary in your local area. However, word to the wise, why not register now so you'll be way ahead of the game and be ready to vote for whoever you want to as the spirit moves you on in November at the big time election. Okay, it doesn't make sense not to register to vote. The government is already spying on everything you got, and so they know where you are. They know who. Don't say, oh, they'll know where I live if I register. Believe me, they know an awful lot more about you.
Sure.
as recent revelations about the NSA. Do you like that? I don't. I'm against it. And by the way, the FBI has issued a number of memorandums to different businesses about who to report to them as a suspected terrorist. And of course, somebody that uses the internet at internet cafes a lot, they could be a suspected terrorist. Somebody that talks too much about the Fourth Amendment, which I spent a half an hour on a couple weeks ago, they could be a terrorist, because the Fourth Amendment says you cannot do this kind of spying. You cannot on American citizens. You can't do that. Unjustifiable search and seizure. You need a warrant. You need a judge. Well, I found out the security, NSA, they've got their own judicial court. That's right. They got their own judges that meet in secret when they want a wiretap. Their own judges that meet in secret. And guess what? 97% of all requests for wiretapping, surveillance of any media, has been approved by the secret court that nobody can even find out what they're doing.
Well, if you could find out, then you'd watch what you say. They have to sneak up on you. You know,
well, I didn't even know such a thing as a secret court. What is this? You know, is this Soviet Russia of the 30s, 40s, and 50s? Is this Hitler's Germany? I sound like Alex Jones, our conspiracy talk show host out of Austin, Texas, who is not the same as Jim Hightower out of Austin, Texas. Interestingly, they both live in the same city, but they're totally different people. But then again, that takes us to our next topic. So anyway, don't forget, if you're registered, about August 6th, that's the date of vote. Personally, yes, you can go and get an absentee ballot. You could even go right now, today, Friday, into City Clerk's office at City Hall, and you could get the ballot request. They'll give you the ballot right there, and you can vote right there today. You don't have to wait to do it through the mail anytime. Before Election Day, you can go right into the city clerk's office, say, I want to get an absentee ballot. I want to do it here. And they'll let you do it right there and over and done with. Personally, I'm not going to do an absentee ballot myself because I don't know enough about all these candidates. I hope a few more come on this show. I hope a few more have money enough to send a flyer.
Yeah.
Yes, I have gone to the League of Women Voters website and read those, 100-word total commentaries from them on four different topics, but that's not enough, folks, to really make a good decision. But that's LWVDDH.org, League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights website, LWVDDH.org. That is something. Even the newspapers haven't given us that much information about the candidates yet.
Exactly.
And I'm not sure if they ever will, because there's 21 candidates.
Well, they'll wait till after.
There's
August.
16 new ones. Yeah, sure. They'll probably wait until it's too late. Yeah.
Well, too late for the candidates that don't win.
Okay, well, we're going to move on, since we don't have a special guest in the studio other than Dennis today. and he's so special, he's here almost every week that he can make it. We have to turn to the garage use issue.
Okay, big issue.
In Dearborn. It went to the Planning Commission, and they had a big meeting this last Monday. And as I predicted, they tabled it. You know, it wasn't resolved. They tabled it. Except, as the Dearborn Press-In got in Wednesday, chose the title, "Ooh, the Planning Commission is close to a garage decision." That's their direct headline. Well, how do you interpret tabling?
It's close.
You know, they did suggest that a city lawyer, not Deborah Walling in this case, but a lawyer for the city of Dearborn, review the issue and come up with appropriate language that would pass legal muster. In other words, people wouldn't sue us if we adopt it. That's kind of fair to all, but it, you know, takes care of some of the concerns of the city of Dearborn and the Planning Commission about different types of garage use that is maybe unhealthy and or unsafe. Well, the issue has not amazingly become a nationally known issue here in Dearborn. I wouldn't be surprised if Fox News hadn't picked up on it by now. But I don't watch Fox News cable channel. Not Channel 62 in Detroit, which is Fox, but I'm talking about the national cable TV news show. Okay, so I'm turning to Sunday edition of Press and Guide from last July 7th, and what they actually republished. And if you didn't look closely at it, it's sort of the highlighted area on page 3A. It's actually from the Associated Press. It's not from a local reporter. This is the National Associated Press story. It was out on the so-called wire service, and any paper in the U.S. or, you know, cable TV news service could have picked it up. And they say, debate over garage issue use in city turns into an Arab versus non-Arab, which is a cultural problem, therefore. They don't say it's racist. And I'm not sure if Arab versus non-Arab is a racist thing, because non-Arab is an awful lot of different races. I'm in that category. If there's only two categories, then non-Arab is a lot of categories, but it still could be that all those other categories don't like Arabs, and even that sort of ethnic bias, I think, is sometimes called racist, even though to be Arabic, believe it or not, the last time I checked, if you had to define yourself on the usual spectrum of races on some application, which is totally wrong and unfair, but you'd check Caucasian.
Really?
The Arabic people would check Caucasian, because Middle Eastern or Arabic is not a different race. It's not. But then again, sociologists tell us, and some physiologists, there's no such thing as race. We're all too darn similar. We're very, very similar in our DNA, our genetic code, and what's a little skin tone difference? Okay? Really, really. And I know there's some people, well, certain races are more intelligent than others. No, it doesn't mean it's in the racial nature of them. And in fact, just using the term irks me, because I know a lot of sociologists, they're friends, they teach here at the college, and from other classes I've had over the last 40 plus years, race is a very outmoded term. It really doesn't apply to anything. You may think about it, but you're wrong. You're probably a racist if you actually use the term. So I'm going to try not to use that term anymore, but it's already come up in the Planning Commission that they had someone challenge them. Well, you're being racist. Planning Commission person or persons, whoever they were challenging. So here's the story, which I thought was very fair and balanced from an Associated Press. Is one of those news services, been around forever, almost since they started the Telegraph, they're known for objectivity. Look it up. It's so rare in journalism. You try to be balanced. You try to give several points of view. And in it, they even featured our own Nabil Abraham, Dearborn resident and instructor and administrator of the Honors College here at Henry Ford Community College. And he says, and I'm sort of quoting him here, first of all, in Dearborn, how many people of Arabic heritage do we have in Dearborn? A third, about a third of the 97,000 people. So more than, you know, what is that, 32,000 people, 33,000 people are of Arabic heritage. All right. So we're talking about cultural influence here in Dearborn. It's not half, of course, but it's not like 10% or 5%. So we do need in this city as a whole to accommodate the practices of other cultures. We've been trying to accommodate the practices of other religions for quite a while, but there's cultural practices. And here's the explanation from Nabil Abraham. Quote, the people of this heritage, he says, their garages are a continuation of marathon socializing sessions that started many years ago in their home countries in the Middle East under shady trees, often accompanied by coffee and a water pipe known as a hookah or argila. Argila?
You're close.
Okay. He says they migrated over time to, in this country, the garage as an extension of the living space, because there really aren't a lot of things going on in nearby community parks. We don't have that many parks, and they don't have the sort of gathering places like they used to have culturally in the Middle East. Okay, and Nabil has said, and here comes the complaint from people who don't have that as part of their tradition. He says, I think it's a class, ethnic reaction. Now, that's sort of a race, saying that you're being racist, but not so, says Dearborn officials in this story, who say the ordinance tightening isn't meant to target Arabs or anyone else. They don't want the garages, which they contend aren't built to the same standards as the rest of the home, to become quote-unquote habitable places for cooking or sleeping. The city of Dearborn says the structures aren't meant to be living spaces, so building permits can't be used to convert them. That conversion, city spokeswoman Mary Londros said, is not only illegal, but also isn't inspected for safety. And she said, we're trying to find a solution that is safe and acknowledges the way garages are being used. So that's the point of the Planning Commission, because you don't want to have such discussions with the city council. It's too darn political. And then the council people would have to do research, know what they're talking about, and then if they make enemies, they won't get reelected. So this way, they can either yay or nay something eventually, and they can blame, if they have to, the Planning Commission. What a great idea. But, of course, the city commissions are also good because they allow a lot of community input and we hope, specialists from the community to look at the issues. Okay. Well, all right. So here we go. What sort of things are happening in the garages? Well, first of all, a lot of people are who use their garages, say for multiple purposes, are installing sliding glass doors, like porch type doors with screens maybe on them, instead of the usual garage door that swings up or goes up above the house. And so then they can use that garage space outdoors for, quote-unquote, socializing. You know, you get a little breeze, sort of like a screened-in porch, but it's not a porch because it's not part of your house, and your house actually is constructed to different building code standards. A garage is just a bunch of 2x4s. It's already reported here, too, and elsewhere, that there's been several fires every year from people cooking in their garages, which is specifically forbidden. Why? It's not safe. It's just wood, folks. It's going to go up. You know, a little spark to the 2x4 wall and the, you know, the wood covering, the siding, it's going to go right up pretty quick. And so, you know, smart people wouldn't do that. And it's against the rules even right now. Okay. Some people don't like the fact that when people use their garages, and I don't like this, as storage sheds exclusively, they got no room for their cars. So the cars have to be parked, they have several cars, all the way down their driveway and sometimes even intrude on the front sidewalks. And does it look good to have a parking lot at the front of your house? Because one issue that didn't come up here, at least not in this story and others, is what about property values? How does a neighborhood look if somebody's trying to buy in that neighborhood? If everybody has parking lots, in effect, it looks like, you know, 2-3 cars in their front yard. I know, on the driveway, but in their front yard all the time. You know, it's just like saying trash barrels. Some people say, oh, trash barrels, they shouldn't be visible. They shouldn't even be in your backyard. Trash barrels should be, although it's not required specifically to be in the garage. You can put them in your backyard out of sight from the front yard. That's what the Dearborn regulation says now. But, you know, some people say, well, trash barrels, as well as cars, need to go into the garage. And this was interesting to me in one other story. In Dearborn, since 1993, uh-oh, where's that other story?
Uh-oh.
I think it's in the Wednesday edition, yeah. We already have some interesting garage use rules in effect. Okay, continued on 9A. I think that's where it was. Okay. See, you always got to turn the page and look at this. I turned to 9A, and it's got half the page there. So the story is not just the headlines. The story is not just the first couple paragraphs, even though, yes, often newspaper style, the major ideas are at the top. But remember, the devil and or God, depending on the metaphor, is in the details. So you should read the details if you're interested in the story. Here's the present 1993 ordinance. Any garages built in the city after 1993 must be able to accommodate 2 vehicles side by side. Uh-huh. That doesn't mean, though, that the vehicles have to be parked in the garage, you know, which I'd kind of like to see. But city rules say that each house must have off-street parking for at least two vehicles. By the way, there's one house near my neighborhood, the neighborhood next to my neighborhood in Dearborn. They apparently got permission to put a super wide curved, they may call it sidewalk, it's like 6 feet wide, off from their driveway, which effectively allows people coming to visit their house to park their car right in front of their porch. In fact, two or three cars. So it's an extension off to the side of their driveway, and it covers half of their front yard with concrete. And there's a rule about that somewhere in the city of Dearborn. How much of your front yard can be concrete? Much less a sidewalk or sidewalks. And they got to be close to the edge on that one, because in effect, every time I pass their house, there's two or three cars in their driveway. I don't think they use their garage. And I understand people in transit, you might just leave your car for a while in the driveway. But then they have, when they're socializing, I guess, they have two, three cars, but they're not parked on the street causing, a congestion of their street. In their front yard on the six-foot-wide curved, it's like a turnaround for their driveway.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually just a small suburban house. I mean, it's not a big mansion that has room for a turnaround like that. So I don't know if they got by the rules or nobody complained, or whether that percent of concrete is somehow, maybe they got a zoning from the Planning Commission. Maybe they got an exception. A lot of people get exceptions.
Did you say that the property has to have room to accommodate two vehicles off of the street? I think you just said that.
Well, yeah,
there's plenty of places in East Dearborn without driveways or garages
where
you have to park on the street. There's no alternative.
And sidewalks can't be blocked either. That's an Americans with Disabilities Act rule.
Right, right.
National principle. And I remember the situation when my daughter used to live in Dearborn near Oakwood Hospital. They had a corner lot, and they had an older garage, which only fit one car,
right,
and a very short driveway, because the driveway for the garage was on the other side of where the house was. But there wasn't, so they were just 10, maybe 6 feet from the sidewalk, and very close to the street, with that. So they had two cars. So what are you going to do on the public service days in Dearborn when you have to get the cars off the street?
Get friendly with your neighbors.
What do you do on the snow removal day? And the city of Dearborn said, we'll take your car and park it at a school or a park near your house.
And then walk?
And then walk three blocks in this case.
In the snow.
Thank you, City of Dearborn. So they kind of gave her an exception about that. I mean, the garage was before 93, and it was so close there really wasn't a driveway for another car. And if you parked another car in front of the garage, then it would block the sidewalk. Okay? And so what are you going to do? So exceptions have to be made based on existing structures. And they do make exceptions depending on special situations, but they don't want to have to make exceptions for a third of the population one by one,
Right.
Okay.
So this is going to be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah. Well, again, there's a lot of suggestions. One person's approach said, "Look, garage I think is for cars. I work on my cars, so I got all my tools. I got a little mini ramp in the garage." And I'd like to have a sink to be able to wash my hands before they come in the house, because there's a lot of grease and dirt and filth, and I don't want to have to mess up the house or the sink in the house for that. And it looks like they're going to try to write in permission for a sink. Okay? But again, probably not for food preparation.
Right.
And the question is, can they approve eating in the garage but not food preparation, cooking?
Right. Well, of course you can eat in the garage. I mean, if you grab a bag of chips from the house, you can go out in the...
One would think, unless you eat flaming skewers of some sort of...
Flambé,
yeah. It's still flaming while you carry it into the garage.
I think common sense would rule there. But, I had a neighbor...
Hear somebody outside saying, oompa, and then they carry the flaming pancakes into the garage. Whatever.
I had a neighbor that had their washer and dryer in their garage, and that's where they did all their laundry. And they had a laundry tub, not tub, but sink in there. And I said, is that part of the, you know, is that against ordinance? And he said, I just keep my garage closed. Nobody knows.
Right. And it's right now, as my understanding is, that kind of water, running water in there is only something that should happen in a house.
So, exactly.
Yeah, it is against the ordinance right now. But I assume it wouldn't be if they approve of the sink. Why wouldn't they approve of, you have to have a sink to drain a washer.
Sure.
Anyway.
It has to be.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Of course, there's a noise issue. Garages aren't very well insulated.
Exactly.
So if your washer and dryer makes a lot of noise, and some of them do, then that's going to be heard by your neighbors who also may be outside socializing.
But it's no different than working on a car with your power tools. And I mean, that's loud,
maybe
too.
Not. Yeah, yeah. But some of these garages for the automobile people, like, they've got big video screens on the wall.
You're not kidding.
To watch cable TV while they're fixing their cars.
Earlier you said
Jay Leno's garage.
Can they make it like a man cave? And I know people that do that. They have a recliner out there.
Right. They can watch TV. Mm-hmm. And but how much living is too much living in terms? I mean, talk about smoking, and maybe water pipes aren't a fire hazard, I guess. I'm not sure. But definitely smoking cigarettes, mm-hmm. and cigars in a garage, there's sparks there, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't put the butts out, and maybe they fall out of the ashtray, and there goes the garage. So there really shouldn't be any smoking of lit cigarettes or tobacco or marijuana or whatever in a garage, because that's a fire hazard. Okay, so garages just are not built for human habitation. Then some people say, well, I want to apply for a permit to let that be. No, they won't do that, because you'd have to practically tear the place down, mm-hmm. and make an attached garage. Like, I have an attached garage, but that garage has to have all the same health and safety standards as my house, because it's part of the house. Okay, it's physically part of the house.
Is that right? So yeah. So it's built to a different standard,
right?
Because it's attached. Yeah. What about a house that's attached by, say, a breezeway? Same thing.
I don't know.
Because I know
to the city inspector.
Because a lot of people will add those types of things later. You know.
Yeah, I don't think even the breezeway wouldn't be built to code. No. So I don't think the garage would have to be that kind of built. But just saying, it is a cultural difference. What should we allow? Specifically, do you want? Like, my issue is, how many cars have to be visible on your property at one time? There's got to be a limit there, and it should not be a constant parking lot. Anyway, but yeah, the health and safety about cooking or even smoking, you know, things where lit matches and flames are occurring, that's got to be against the rules. And, of course, sleeping there. And if you put in a sink, somebody's going to be tempted, since the water line is there, to put in a toilet.
Sure. Maybe
shower. While we're socializing, somebody's got to go to the bathroom. And rather than having to go all the way in the house, why can't we have a toilet in the garage?
Sure.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Okay. So this is not going to end easily or nicely.
As long as they rule in favor of safety, I'm okay.
Yeah. It's got to be clearly a health and safety issue.
Exactly.
And if the culture that might cause the hazard doesn't understand that, then that is their problem. Nonetheless, and I think it concluded with a statement from maybe Nabil, you know, Dearborn just has too many small little laws.
That's the article concluded?
Mm-hmm. And so let me get that correct, because I don't want to mistake.
I love
Nabil. He's an intelligent person. We've got to go to three.
I vote in favor of building a screened-in gazebo in your backyard if you have space.
Here it is. Nabil Abraham. What's the difference? This is at the end of the AP article. What's the difference between sitting together and smoking a hookah or a cigar and having tea or having a homemade brew, like in the garage? And by the way, Abraham doesn't have a garage hangout for himself. He says, finally, his quote is, "This town has a law for everything and anything. It needs to loosen up a little bit." Well, I think I'd have to say that there's too many darn rules and regulations in the United States and in the state of Michigan, too. Every time we get new people elected to office, they have to justify that they did something. So they find some little rule somewhere. And I'm saying a little bit of tweaking shouldn't help, but it's more regulation, which really maybe is not even enforceable and is really not going to help people. Not very much. And we've got this huge group of laws and rules that are expensive in many ways and not cost effective at all. And they don't appreciably add much, if anything, to health and safety. We need to review what they are and get rid of them. When was the last time you had a legislator elected who actually started getting rid of, repealing laws that don't make any sense and can't be enforced and cost us a lot of money to no great benefit? I can't remember one. I have to ask George Durrani next time we get him. How many laws have you repealed this year, George?
Exactly. And you know what? There's very, very funny books out there on laws that are still on the books.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't have a turtle and name him Peter or whatever. This is a good time following Dr. Abraham's, your quote for him to state that the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college.
Although he's at the college.
Well, he's at the college, and that is okay.
But he has a right to his opinion, too.
Absolutely, and we're just reporting
that it. We agree. We're challenging you to think about this issue. And if you have friends on the Planning Commission or even City Council people, let them know your opinions. Send them a little email, something respectable. You don't have to get emotional about it. I don't think it's racism, and I don't think Nabil is suggesting that, but there are cultural and ethnic differences here, and a lot of them should be respected, albeit to a certain point of health and safety practicality. Just like, I want to say, you know, I've railed here on the show against even our snow removal laws, and our grass cutting rules. And it's ridiculous, you know. And in fact, there's instances, if you go around town, either in a snow emergency or looking at, you know, length of grass, and who's enforcing that? I mean, and should it really be enforced? Well, we don't normally enforce it unless we have to, unless it's really a big problem. Well, if it's a big problem, it means the grass is more than 12 inches high, I think, full of weeds or something, all right? Not 6 inches, you know. Anybody goes out there with a ruler, and some neighborhoods actually have volunteers that go around with rulers and then report you to the city.
You're not exaggerating.
No.
That is very true.
They're in my neighborhood, too.
Crazy.
You know, it's a rule in Dearborn. Everybody's got to follow it. And, I don't think so. I think the idea of the rule was to enforce it for the worst-case scenario. But if the worst case is 12 inches or more, then you can't just say, well, it looks bad, you know, because that's legally that's a personal opinion.
That's very subjective.
Subjective.
Yes.
So they have to have something like 6 inches of grass or 8 inches. And my neighbors, I'm sure, if I've got a police officer right next to me, are constantly looking at mine and say, oh my gosh, he lets his grass go to 6 inches before he cuts it. Cause they're all down at an inch and a half.
Really?
They want golf courses. And we're right next to a golf course, so ours has to look the same
but
as theirs.
But that dries it out, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. They use 4 times as much water to water it, and they're cutting it every week, 5 days to every 7 days. I cut once every 2 weeks, and I cut it down to 3.5 inches, which is the highest my mower will go. I use an electric mower that makes half as much noise and doesn't pollute. And, of course, because it's 3.5 inches and the electric mower, it mulches. I don't have to rake. I don't have to dump clippings. It's natural fertilizer for my grass. And so my grass looks greener and more healthy than all of their grass, even though it's longer and it doesn't look like a golf course. Excuse me. That's why, and you mentioned last week, that's why I pretty much have a forest in my front yard.
Yeah.
It's trees, bushes, landscaping. The city of Dearborn allows that. They did stop the guy across the street. I mentioned this. He had a garden in the front yard.
Yeah.
He had trees and climbing things that were going up 4 or 5 feet, and then he had low-lying things and watermelons, and like half his yard was this fantastic garden. And when it ripened, he gave it for free to the people in the neighborhood.
I like it.
It's really cool.
So what do they stop him from doing?
Well, you can't have a garden in your front yard.
Okay.
It's non-standard, and it's not allowed. So,
interesting.
And yet, yes, we need more personal gardens. Yes, we need more healthy food. I guess it's got to be in your backyard. I'm sorry. Can't put it in your front yard. So he was already planted when they came out, and they had 2-3 days of inspectors, you know, looking and talking. And I think they just said, okay, this is the last year. You know, you can't do it anymore, but you're already planted. It's already started. And so it's gone, you know.
That's too bad.
But they do allow you to have a forest in your front yard.
Right.
But just in case, I've got a border of grass. So I do have grass, but it's like 10%. But as long as they don't have more than 50% concrete, that's what they will jump on you, or a garden. Well, do we really need all that? You know, well, I...
So he was growing he had the garden in his front yard for his own personal, like he would eat, and then anything extra he would give away,
actually,
too.
Actually, because he had a sense of height and texture and color, I think it looked as good as my flower garden, shrubbery, variety of trees and bushes, which I tried to make attractive, you know. And I thought his was extremely attractive and fascinating. And it's amazing more people didn't steal his food, you know, in the middle of the night.
Well.
I thought it looked perfectly fine. And what a great example to the world, you know. But no, it's against Dearborn rules. So I kind of agree with Nabil. And I just challenge any elected official. What laws, ridiculous laws, irrational, not cost-effective laws, have you repealed recently? Okay? Don't tell me, well, everything on the books is kind of okay. We just want to tweak things. Well, heck with your tweaking. In most cases, it doesn't help. It's not useful. But you put it in your newsletters and you try to campaign on what you did. But what did you undo that needs undoing? Okay, our bureaucracy is getting such that we do. I mean, there's some things we got to do, like healthcare. I've spoken on. We need national single payer, easy healthcare for all. And does that lead us into our next topic? Maybe it does. But maybe I better get my breath here. So we're gonna listen to just one Jim Hightower comment, and for this week, it's called "The Mean Team." And then I want to talk about the Medicaid scandal in Michigan. But I think you already heard a lot of it. But we have a local opinion here in one of the papers that I'd like to share with you. Here's Jim Hightower.
Come on, team, let's get mean. This is not the chant of rabid football fans egging on their team to pound their opponents. Rather, this is the raucous war cry of far-out right-wing ideologues pumping up Team GOP to pound the bejesus out of America's millions of unemployed workers. Far from a game, this is real, and it's a moral abomination. I've been unemployed before, and I can tell you, it's a misery. All the more so today, when there are far more people out of work than there are job openings. This leaves millions of our fellow Americans mired in the debilitating misery of long-term unemployment. But that's not miserable enough for a feral breed of Ayn Randian zealots who are lobbying Republican governors, legislators, and Congress critters to punish the jobless for, well, for their joblessness. In this perverse universe, unemployment benefits and other poverty prevention programs are sapping our nation's vitality by allowing moochers to live the life of Riley and avoid work. The GOP's budget demigod, Representative Paul Ryan, summarized this doctrine in a fanciful homily deriding America's tattered safety net as, quote, a hammock that lulls able-bodied people to lives of dependency and complacency. This from a guy who has spent his adult life in the sweet swaying hammock of congressional privilege. As ridiculous and just plain mean as this attitude is, it plays well in the insanity of Republican primary elections. So state after state, as well as the U.S. House, are succumbing to this pound-the-poor right-wing dogma by frenetically slashing unemployment benefits. This is Jim Hightower saying, behind this faux philosophical push are the smiling barons of corporate America. Without jobless payments, you see, desperate millions will be forced to take jobs on whatever miserable terms the barons decree.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
This is WHFR. .fm, the station making waves, the new WHFR Journal for July 12th, 2013. Jay and Dennis here with you. Thank you for listening. A couple quickie things. It's Wyandotte Art Fair this week, and it'll be done this Sunday. So get on down to Wyandotte. They usually have the second biggest display of artists and other things, different than Ann Arbor, but it's still a very big deal, and we think that'd be fun for the family to do. It's supposed to be fairly good weather this weekend. Also, a pet interest of mine is motorcycles. I rode a motorcycle for maybe a half dozen years in my youth, and I love it. I think it's a great idea for transportation, especially in good weather. And But I highly recommend, because a lot of people are thinking, well, car is expensive, I ought to buy a motorcycle or a motor scooter. Take the basic motorcycle safety class that is approved and designed by the Motorcycle Safety Foundation. It's offered here at Henry Ford Community College, and it's under lifelong learning, which doesn't exist anymore, but this class does. There's three sections, three weekends. So you got a weekend available before you kill yourself. Maybe you got a new motorcycle. I believe 16 hours of instruction, so it's 8 hours a day for 2 days in a row. It's only a $25 cost for both days. $25 cost. And these courses, I took the course myself before I got my first motorcycle. They cover every safety tip, and they actually provide motorcycles for you to ride.
That was my first question.
You don't have to provide your own motorcycle.
So if you're putting your toe in the water.
Little Hondas and Kawasaki's, and participants must be at least 15 years old. You got to be present for all the classes to pass. Riders must supply their own, though. Department of Transportation approved motorcycle helmet. Okay, it can't be a bicycle helmet, by the way.
Right.
You know, that doesn't work. It's not safe enough. Eye protection, full-finger gloves, sturdy over-the-ankle boots, heavy-duty pants, heavy-duty long-sleeve shirt or jacket, and rain or cold weather gear, if the class is happening in that, because it will in the real world. So if you got all that stuff, then you're ready. Okay, now participants under 18, though, must bring a waiver signed by a parent guardian on the first day of class. These classes fill quickly because they're great, fantastic. $25. They provide the motorcycle. One of the things I thought was the most fun, and I know it sounds dangerous maybe to a senior.
This should be good.
What you don't want to do on a motorcycle, if you see somebody, let's say a big truck pulls out in front of you.
Right.
There's not much time. Not enough time to brake. Although motorcycles can stop a lot faster than a car, by the way, their stopping distance is tremendously less, or swerve, because swerving might be a problem on a motorcycle, not like a car, which it might just skid in around to the right or left. How to quickly stand up on the foot pegs. Imagine this. The motorcycle is going forward. You jump from the saddle to stand on the foot pegs.
Okay.
It's like standing up on the saddle on a horse. You're in the your feet are down in the stirrups, but you can actually stand up rather than sitting in the saddle. Okay.
We do it on a bike or bicycle all the time.
The next step is take one of your legs, quickly put it on the seat. You got to bring it all the way up, bend that leg, put it on the seat, and push yourself off the back of the motorcycle. Yeah. Because running into a brick wall or a truck is going to kill you faster than rolling off the back of the motorcycle. And so I think they still do it. They did in my course. You're on their own motorcycles, after all.
Right.
You just go in low speed, and you have to quickly stand on the foot pegs, put your one leg foot on the saddle, push yourself off the back. And they have mattresses or whatever, or rubber covered pads, like exercise pads there. And sure, to ride a motorcycle, you have to be a little flexible. So I would think seniors might want to, well, you know, are you really flexible? Are you really comfortable? Because this will save your life, this alone. And I thought, well, that's impossible. Well, I learned how to do it. I may not be flexible enough anymore, but I learned how to do that. And other tips, you know, how do you safely turn corners in a motorcycle? How much can you lean? They also had some 4x4 railroad ties. If you have to hit something like that, can you keep control of the bike? Well, again, of course, you stand up on the foot pegs. You get ready for the bump. In other words, your whole body and your legs become a shock absorber.
Okay.
And you also pull up on the front handlebars. Don't do a wheelie, but you just pull up a little bit to get a little height and leverage when that front wheel hits the tie. And it's fantastic. So I can't tell you how important this is. All the classes will meet at HFCC's Dearborn Heights Center, which still exists, Ann Arbor Trail between Warren and Outer Drive. For more information, there's a phone number. I assume it still works. Call any number you can here at the college. You can go to our website, learn basic motorcycle safety skills at Henry Ford Community College, 877-855-5252. I never heard that number before, but maybe it works. Toll free, 877 855-5252. Maybe that's the Motorcycle Safety Foundation
who
coordinates it. Yeah.
Now, my question is, the are you qualified after this to get your – is this what you would take to get a motorcycle license?
If you pass this,
yeah,
you will pass the motorcycle operator test drive at a Secretary of State's license.
So that's not the same thing. This
No.
Gotcha.
But believe me, you if you get through this in 2 days, you will know enough to pass the state-required little – they don't do a road test. They take you – in fact, mine was in Wyandotte. They have a parking lot in the back of the Secretary of State's office there, and you go around at only about 5 miles an hour, go around left, right, forward, you know, because if you can maneuver a motorcycle at slow speed smoothly, then you can do fast speed no problem. It's amazing, but it's true. And unfortunately, though, the guy before me who didn't take the class, at the end, you come down sort of a straight, long section, and whenever they choose the Secretary of State's person, they raise their hand as a stop sign, and you've got to stop as fast as you can. And the guy before me who was doing this, he jammed on his brake, but only the front brake.
Oh, no.
And the motorcycle came to a stop, and he flew off over the front handlebars.
Was he all right?
Yeah, and she passed him.
Oh, wow.
He passed.
Well, he passed
and
his motorcycle.
Got his motorcycle endorsement for that.
Well, it's a very forgiving class.
Just crazy. And I had no trouble, of course, because I had gone through the class. So I just think that's so important. And I love motorcycles, and they can be safe, but you need to, just like driving skills, you need to have a really good class taught by the right instructor, and this is the way to go. Nationally certified guidelines. It's been in place, well, since I started riding in the early 80s, and it's just highly recommended. I know I go too long on that. Okay, what about that Medicaid thing? Well, you probably know that our Republican governor has, I think the most general way to say is he's chided the other Republicans in our legislature for not approving Michigan for Medicaid for many, many, many low-income people, for postponing the vote.
It's about 400,000 people, isn't it? 300,000 people?
Yeah, it's
377 or something.
It's an absolute disaster. So Press and Guide did publish, Tom Watkins, who usually writes on education issues on this, he said the Medicaid issue in Michigan has become a disaster. Okay. And in fact, it's so strongly worded that the newspaper editors put in this note before it. Best read with your tongue firmly planted in your cheek.
Okay.
Any resemblance to reality is pure Michigan. Okay. He says the entire state has been added to Governor Rick Snyder's disaster declaration. Last week, Snyder announced that the Michigan State Police amended a recent disaster declaration to include the entire state to support the ongoing recovering efforts after the Michigan Senate, controlled by Snyder's own Republican Party, left town without passing Medicaid expansion. Okay. Snyder took this extraordinary action after the GOP senators, all of whom have gold-plated, taxpayer-funded health care plans, refused to bring the Medicaid expansion bill to a vote. What a disaster. The potential carnage brought by the Senate's failure to act is more than some boring accounting statistic. Our CPA nerd governor explained, quote, from Snyder, their failure to act will take a human toll on someone's grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, sister, brother, son, daughter across the state of Michigan. And he continued, the repairs and assessments of Michigan's damaged areas are ongoing. We're looking at all options to rebuild our communities and our public health after the GOP Senate leadership shirked its responsibility to all Michiganders, leaving the working poor to fend for themselves.
Wow.
Now, is this satire? It says, take it with your tongue in cheek. He said something pretty much like that. It's unconscionable because most of the money to cover this is coming from the federal government. It's true the state will have to pay a larger share in upcoming years to do this. But in the long run, I still hear people, even on Craig Folly's show on WDET, Monday through Friday mornings, 10 to 12, or in the evenings, too, repeated, calling in and saying, well, I don't want to have to pay health insurance premiums for those poor people. And, of course, I'm making them sound like dullards and or stupid people and by the sound of their voice, and maybe that's in my tone. I'm not saying if it was intended or not. But as was pointed out by Craig Folly, who really knows the issues as a talk show host and doing the news every day, hey, you know, you're already paying the cost more than you should be in the health insurance you have for the medical care for the uninsured. If you look at the total picture, it's out of control. If we had plans for call it preventative health maintenance, these people wouldn't have to go into emergency and then have these huge emergency treatment bills that we all have to share one way or the other. Yes, look at the big picture, people, Republicans. And in fact, we haven't gone far enough. It's my opinion, of course, as I said over and over. It needs to be universal single payer. Okay? Now, if you want to leave out extremely rich people, or if you want them to be able to opt out, fine. But they still got to pay, and I think their fair share should be more, okay? Because the poor people can't fully pay. And then the government needs to get into exactly what is good health care. And yes, there's going to be regulations and so on. But imagine you eliminate all these insurance programs and all of their overheads. You eliminate all these health care plans and all of the overhead that comes in those, and you have one single plan, Medicaid, or if you're over retirement age, Medicare. In other words, universal single-payer health care, which all the most civilized countries in the world already provide for their citizens as part of the social contract. I thought that's what the Pilgrims did when they came to this country. They long trip, terrible trip over the Atlantic Ocean. They're all sick, but they will not get off that boat until they write a statement of what a contract of what they all agree to, called the Mayflower Compact. Compact, contract. That's what they called it, the compact. And in other words, we're going to treat each other fairly. We're going to be concerned about everybody's well-being. And they felt they had to write that down so everybody would understand. I thought we already had a constitution. I thought we already had a Declaration of Independence. We already have those guidelines written down. Why don't we act like compassionate, loving and fair-minded people and get the health care we deserve in this country? We should not be a country that charges for health care, which, yes, I think should be a guaranteed right, and we all should share the burden, and probably the people that have a lot of extra money can share it a little more for the good of our society. And I would think they'd want to, you know. As they say, noblesse oblige. If you're part of the nobility, then you've got certain responsibilities, obligations, if you don't know your French. So, by golly, that's what we got to do, okay? And I hope you'll think about all these issues we raised today on the Journal. Do your research. Let people know. Don't take what I say. Don't say, oh, I agree with Koronik. Well, no, you agree with yourself after you've done the research and looked at the other opinions, and then take action, okay? Then let people know. That's good citizens, and I know you all are. You wouldn't be listening to the show unless they're doing it for the humor.
Oh boy!
Well, they're waiting for Dennis's jokes.
Well, then, and if you are, I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, I did. I know Joanne just entered the building, but we have to. We talked about the thing. It's not called Aniamo anymore. It's called the
Joe McCary's Steakhouse.
Yeah, and it's on July 30th. And I know we have time, but one of our questions was, does it include Dearborn and Dearborn Heights candidates? And it does.
Oh,
so that's,
okay.
To me, is a plus. And, of course, it's free, but there's a cash bar.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that closer to the time, but I just wanted to clarify that, in fact, Dearborn Heights will be there.
A couple other quick things. The Dearborn Animal Shelter is having an adopt-a-thon in the parking lot at Home Depot down in Allen Park. Okay, that's tomorrow. All day, over 150 different